I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, head out of the Del Real here with my partner, colleague, friend, Mr. Nick Hodge, who's also, of course, an investor and the publisher of Daily Profit Cycle. We're back, everybody. This is the 334th episode of our weekly therapy session. And my sweet baby Jesus, do we need it? That we call Investing in Bizarro World. We're going to talk Jerome. We're going to talk bull markets. We're going to talk Beaver Creek. We're going to talk. There's a lot to talk about. Before I even get going, Nick, first and foremost, how are you? How have you been? We got to catch up at the Beaver Creek Precious Metal Summit. We'll touch on that. But how are you doing this fine day?
I'm doing great, Gerardo. It's good to be back after a week off. Plenty to talk about. Good, bad, ugly, and in between. It was good to see you. It was good to see Mr. Tim, who is behind the scenes with the video camera on those interviews and also in this podcast. Yeah, doing good. Haven't really processed all the events of the past week, given that we had so many meetings, talked to so many people, and then jumped right back into it. But hey, it's a bull market, and that's how it goes. How are you?
It is a bull market. That is how it goes. I am feeling very fortunate, Nick. In the past couple of weeks, over 1,000 Palestinians have been killed. So people have been left motherless and fatherless and kidless. The Supreme Court decided that racial profiling brown people and specifically was A-okay. So green light on, you know, all brown people here in America. The Yemen prime minister was killed by Israel. That happened a few weeks back. What else? Republican politicians voted to protect pedophiles and block the release of the Epstein files. All they had to do is like vote yes to let the American public on both the right, the left, and in the middle see who was guilty of raping kids. And they decided to vote against that. And a very popular and polarizing podcaster, I don't know if you heard, named Charlie Kirk, was killed as well. So it's been a couple of weeks, man. I'm feeling very fortunate. I just happened to have gotten back from Vegas, was there for a big boxing match with my beautiful wife, had a phenomenal time, made it back safe. We were at Beaver Creek, but it's definitely a bizarro world out there, Nick. And I don't know whether to cry or cry to laugh or laugh to cry, but it's a lot going on out in the world today.
I think a lot of people have the same feelings. I think that some of the events that have transpired over the past week, some of which you just mentioned, are very par for the course for a fourth turning that is now seemingly escalating. I know that's a term we throw out there a lot, but I'm seeing a lot of people write about things now, like they're discovering them for the first time, like
yes,
drawing parallels between political violence of today in the 1960s and 70s, like, who's been calling for that for 5 or 10 years? You know, the events are tragic, but they're not unforeseen or unexpected. And so I think that's where I would go with it is, you know, I see a lot of people losing their fucking shit. Sorry to cuss in the first 5 minutes on both sides, right?
Yep.
About whatever. And I don't think that's the modus operandi you should be employing to get you and your loved ones through this period of turbidity, both in politics, geopolitics, markets, economics, socioeconomics, etc. And so, you know, I feel like I sound like a broken record sometimes, but I turn inward and I turn to my family and I double down on that deep well that drives me, which is making sure they're protected and cared for and paid for and have the things they need. And a lot of the superfluous things that happened and will happen are really tangential to what you're trying to do and your goals. So I tend to tune a lot of it out, especially because I'm not really political and I'm not super ingrained on either side. And I did this podcast alone without you a couple of weeks ago. And I was saying, I mostly point and laugh at politicians. And you mentioned the Epstein thing, like they were voting on that while Charlie Kirk was shot, like while he was assassinated, that's when the vote was going down about the Epstein thing. And my immediate thoughts go to like, this is the people y'all get your panties in a bunch for. This is the people y'all are killing each other for. This is the people y'all
exact
are
thoughts
at each other's throats for. Like, yep, it's not worth it, man.
It's
like,
not
worry about you and yourself. Yeah.
It's not worth it. And if I want to implore, listen, is it absolutely heartbreaking what's happening in Gaza and to Palestinians and to people around the world, right? What's happening in my home country of Mexico and what's happening in my home country here in the U.S. Yes. Tragedy all over the place, right? the design by the people in power. And if the Epstein thing doesn't move you, regardless of your political beliefs, nothing will move you, right? The design by the people in power is exactly this. It is for them to be able to rape, plunder, pillage on both sides and distract you by keeping us at each other's throats. And I am not saying that Charlie Kirk's death was bullshit or that I don't sympathize with his wife or his kids, because of course I do.
Sure.
Because I'm a human. And of course I sympathize with the hundreds and probably thousands of young ladies, young women, girls that were raped and molested by the wealthiest and most powerful amongst us. You can't lose your humanity, folks. And the design is for us as a people to focus on the divisions and the tribalism. And they'll do rich versus poor. They'll do black versus white. They'll do left versus right. They'll do trans versus straight. They'll do gay versus this. They'll do brown. Do not fall for it. I implore you all.
A distinction. Gay versus straight. Trans is another thing. Yeah.
Well, they do trans versus everybody, right? I mean, I saw the I don't know if it was the governor. I believe it was the governor of Utah saying he was praying that it was a foreign-born person that had done this to Charlie Kirk. And I'm sitting here going, it's a tragedy enough, no matter who the hell was stupid and crazy enough to do that. Doesn't it's matter to me somebody who did to blame. It. Yeah. So no, don't fall for it, folks. I know it's not likely in the next several years, because I understand the part of the cycle in the fourth turning that we're in. We likely have a good 4 to 7 years of this just really hyper turbulent, violent at times, societal shift that's going on. But man, for those of you that are a little level headed, can we try to come together as a community and better each other and work more on the similarities and not the differences, and you know, hopefully try to keep the violence to a minimum or non-existent at all, and to get back to civility, right?
Just some civility is great. Levity is also great. Let me provide some before we get into the markets. I took my kids to the Spokane County Interstate Fair over the weekend. And county fairs, state fairs are a great place to people watch and to see all the people, right? Because everybody comes out to the fair, right? The penthouse dwellers and the street dwellers. And it's a good way to see a mashup of society. And it's just so some levity. Some of this is going to rub you the wrong way, Gerardo. Lots of Trump 2028 hats at the Spokane County Interstate Fair. I saw a shirt that said, oh, what did it say? Am I going to forget? Something about deporting them all, like rounding them up and deporting them all, but it rhymed. And I was like, good gracious, man. The kid that was wearing it was like 13 or 14 years old. And so you're really getting to the point now where you're getting this indoctrination of younger generations. I also saw a couple where the woman was in shorts and had hairy legs and wearing Doc Martens, and the man was in a dress. And this is how they were walking around the fair. So it takes all kinds of people out there, man. And you know what? There was no violence at the fair. Everyone was smiling on the Ferris wheel. Everyone was watching the tractor pull. And yeah, you're wearing your snarky t-shirts or whatever, but we're all having fun at the fair, right? And I just try to have fun at the fair, whether it's literally at the fair or whether it's here talking to you or just progressing through life. Like, let that stuff roll off you, man.
Well, listen, I think that was well said. That was well put. I'll provide a little bit more levity there. We were at Beaver Creek, and it's a good segue. We'll talk Beaver Creek and the sentiment there. But we were at Beaver Creek, and you know, a buddy of ours, it was just enthralled by this shirt that he happened to see with his daughter. And his, you know, his daughter tends to lean a certain way politically, and you know, he tends to lean somewhere in between. And so anyway, everybody was able to get a good laugh about it. And the shirt said, I'm not gay, but $20 is $20. And I found it highly amusing that he found it highly amusing. Just because he's a tad bit older, and you know, can't cry sometimes. It's good to laugh. But yeah, back to the serious part of it, you know, the Supreme Court ruling allowing for racial profiling, that's why it's so dangerous, because when you start indoctrinating kids, these are your future lawmakers. These are your future politicians. These are your future Supreme Court justices. And so it's a lot to pay attention. Let's see where it goes. Let's talk markets, which is why most people watch this and listen to us. We were at the Beaver Creek Precious Metal Summit. By design, it's a precious metal summit. A who's who of gold and silver companies were there. And I got to say, from my perspective, it was the best attended, most upbeat precious metal summit in the 9 years that I've been going. I'd love your take on what you thought, but we definitely have a bull market, folks.
I mean, you've seen some of the things I've seen. Over 9,000 meetings were had during the week. That's a lot of meetings. Gosh, I was reading in, I guess it was Joe Mazumdar's letter that he was at a steakhouse or heard that a steakhouse ran out of red wine on the last night. I mean, that's bull market problems, right? Lots more smiles than in previous years. A more diverse audience, not in terms of color and of skin, but in terms of the institutions that were represented there, i.e. lots of larger firms, banking teams, etc., deals seemingly getting done. I don't think it's a coincidence that you saw Newmont sell Coffee, Barrick sell Hemlo. I saw multiple $40, $50 million deals announced. Pretty sure those were getting circled, soft circled during the Beaver Creek week, right? And now we're in the thick of the Denver Gold Forum. So, I mean, it was good. It was good to be there. It's good to catch up with companies, many of which we've talked about on this podcast. And yeah, I mean, unfortunately, you got some rain on the last day and you didn't get to get all the interviews done. But that was one of the more upbeat Beaver Creeks that I've been to. And you've been to a few more than I have, but came away from there with a lot of new ideas, a lot of follow up to do. And yeah, I guess that's it. I mean, less on Beaver Creek and more on where we are is, like I said, you're getting into a bull market. So tactics and strategies and things change. You got to find stuff that hasn't run, et cetera. But that's why we go to the places that we go to.
Absolutely. To vet ideas, do due diligence, get, you know, one-on-one catch-ups and kind of plot the course for the next, you know, several quarters, right? So let's talk about that. Some pretty important technical indicators that have been exceeded here over the past several weeks. Gold, brand new record high. It touched the 3,700 mark. It's pulled back, but it seems like 36 is a new floor, though we have support below that, right? On the technical basis there. I'd love for you to opine on that. And then we can talk silver, which of course finally broke through 42. It looks like that's a new floor there on that front. That's an important technical breakthrough that we've been waiting on in the silver space. But your thoughts where gold is technically in the support?
Yeah, let me pull up a chart and I can talk about it. Let's talk about the Fed as we do that. You got a quarter point rate cut this week, which everyone expected. You know, Trump wanted a big old rate cut. Some people were talking about 50 basis points. You got a quarter point with a promise of likely two more before the end of the year. It was firmly baked in. Yep. This comes as inflation is reaccelerating from mid twos. By the way, it hasn't been at 2% in like 8 years or something like that. Nowhere close to the Fed's target. And here we are cutting rates. But inflation ticking back up. And you sort of had a wonky response. So that's what I was going to get to. That's why I was stalling. You know, what's supposed to happen when the Fed cuts rates? Well, rates are supposed to go down and gold is supposed to go up. Here in the 24 hours since the rate cut, you've had the inverse response. What's actually happened some years ago when they started cutting rates. And so what you've had is the 10-year actually bounced up. For a second, it went down below 4%, and then it went back up, I don't know, 4.2%, 4.3%. You had the dollar strengthen just a tiny bit coming off of 95, 96, up to 97. And you had gold lose $50 or $60. I just think that's volatility surrounding the Fed decision. Make no mistake, a quarter point rate cut in this environment is an invitation to people to buy gold, right? I mean, the rates are going down, inflation is going back up. I've read that China continues to buy. And it's also a kickoff party for, I think, continued Fed intervention, i.e. QE and money printing, all those things, because the debt, as we know, which nobody's mentioned amid Mr. Kirk and the FTC and Mr. Trump, which they do a great job of obfuscating, right, is the debt continues to go like this. It continues
37 trillion, baby.
A larger chunk of the, you know, federal tax revenue, et cetera. And so I'll just share my screen and maybe we can run through a couple of charts. In that environment, you get, can I do it? Yeah. A gold chart that looks like this, right? I mean, up and to the right with candles stretching skyward, doing jazz hands, right?
Jazz hands indeed. Look at that. That's a sexy chart.
I mean, maybe we can zoom in a little bit. We'll find some support right about there. I mean, if it's going to go, yeah, it can't go below like here, right? $3,300, $3,400, but you're in open sky territory right here, right? And so what happens now is it's just digesting these gains. Like, this was gold front running the quarter point rate cut that you just got. And you've heard the term sell the news. Well, that's what's happening right here. The market sold the news that everyone knew was coming, and it's going to digest its Python meal because it just moved from 3,300 to 3,600. And you'll get some consolidation right here where that lower wick of the candle is. Likely gearing up for the next leg higher. I mean, what do I know? But don't take it from me. Take it from Goldman Sachs, who's calling for $4,000 gold like easily and $5,000 gold if just 1% of global capital moves into the precious metal, which it will because it always has. And central banks continue to buy. And I should mention Tether because I've been writing and tweeting about it. And those folks, Tether, which is also... not also, but it's one of the largest holders of U.S. treasuries, like up there with, it owns more treasuries than like Germany, for example. It's been buying 2 tons a month of gold. That's more than many central banks are buying. And they've taken $100 million stake in the gold royalty companies. And so you've got a lot of drivers here now. I just mentioned a bunch, right? Rate cuts, inflation, geopolitics, central bank buying, stable coin buying. I mean, all the wind is at the back here. And so gold is run and silver, which you mentioned, which I don't pay as much attention to, but I obviously know a little bit about, is now getting comfortable above $40 an ounce, right? You can see here, this is that run up ahead of the Fed meeting here, jumps up above $40, and you'll likely see consolidation now that makes $40 the new floor, whereas $40 before was the hurdle we had to jump over. So look, I don't want to sound like a cheerleader, and again, you said don't confuse a bull market for brain, but these charts are up and to the right, and when I get my little newsletters every day from Mr. Sorkin and Bloomberg, I can't help but notice that gold is getting a few more shout-outs than it has in the past 5 years.
One thing that's worth highlighting, the people that have traditionally shunned gold and stayed away from it because they didn't have to go to it, right? We had, once upon a time, we had a stable currency. There was a gentleman named Volcker that, you know, hiked rates to 17%, did away with inflation. There was a gentleman once upon a time named Bill Clinton that actually, believe it or not, balanced the fucking budget, right? And so however he got there is another conversation for another day, right? But it was all hell of a lot more balanced than it is now. That is not the case. The reason that hedge funds and people like Jeffrey Gundlach are now coming in and saying a 25% allocation in gold isn't unreasonable. It's not because gold is so amazing. At the end of the day, it is just a yellow metal. It's a pet rock, as it's been called, right? When people try to insult it, but it's got a multi-thousand year track record of preserving wealth. And what is happening right now is fiat currencies are being decimated. It is by design, just like it is by design to keep us at each other's throats. It is by design for you to not pay attention to $37 trillion in debt. And like Nick said, we're adding to it. We're not addressing it in any kind of way. We're adding to it. So if you believe that there's no Epstein list and you believe that tariffs are not inflationary and you believe that tariffs are going to help balance the budget, just like you believe that a gold visa at $5 million a pop was also going to help balance the budget. I got a bridge in Brooklyn. I have a couple of bridges in Brooklyn that I would love to take an offer on because it's a bizarre world out there, folks. And a lot of people believe a lot of things, but so, math is math and the math ain't math. And when it comes to the national debt and it look at the end of the day, we might still be the cleanest dirty shirt in the foreign currency basket, but that day that will see its day and run its course. And yes, long winded way of explaining to you why I think gold has a lot more room to run. If you think you missed the run, if you're looking at gold on CNBC and you're seeing new record highs and you're looking at your spouse, you're looking at your partner, and you're going, man, we missed that run. We missed the days where it was $1,000. I don't want to get in at the top. I'm afraid. We're nowhere near the top, folks. And let's, you know, I'm not going to give too many names to too many equities on this go around this specific episode for the simple fact that I'm doing a speculator sessions tomorrow at 1 o'clock Central Time for Junior Resource Speculator, which is, you know, a higher end resource stock service that focuses on the speculative side of the sector, right? Smaller cap, higher risk, higher reward opportunities. But this is the most fertile environment that I've had in my 16-year career trading in the resource space exclusively. It's the most fertile environment I have ever had to work with. And I am giddy with excitement. I had positions that were down 40%, Nick, a month and a half ago that are up 60% today. And nothing's changed but the sentiment. And this is this is that kind of market where if you can match good stock picking, quality teams, quality structures that actually deliver, the sentiment, we have the wind behind our back, everybody. We have tailwinds. And if you can match those two things, you don't need a lot of money to make a lot of money in this environment. We're going to have that, I believe, for several years. So I couldn't be more excited, again, as usual, about gold, silver, how that's looking. Copper is looking robust. The U.S., let's give credit where credit is due. Whoever advises Mr. Trump on critical metals policy and mining and doing that, I've said it before, I'll say it again, all the kudos on that front because they're absolutely nailing that. There's conversations of setting up a $5 billion fund to incentivize mining and exploration here in the U.S. So look, U.S.-centric, North American-centric critical metals and mining stories that actually have something or discover something are going to do very, very well. But there's also a lot of non-North American-centric companies that are also going to do very, very well. The key to becoming rich and potentially wealthy in this space during these years is going to be picking the right stocks with the right people, with the right structures. That's how you maximize profit. So yes, can you do well if you don't know much and you just listen to whoever that hasn't been doing this in this environment? Absolutely. Absolutely. Our mentor has told us that in a bull market, a monkey could throw a dart at 10 names and 8 of those will go up in this market. And that doesn't mean that the monkey's a resource expert. It means it's that type of market. But if you can pick 5 or 6 of those names out of those 8 that deliver you 1,000, 2,000, 3,000% gains, and those are very doable. We were doing that in bear markets. You can really, really do some damage and damage in a good way and you know, hedge and counter the crazy spending that's going on around the world and the losing of your purchasing power via the dollar.
This is International Tower Hill, and you were talking about, you know, indicators.
It'll never be a deposit, folks. I've been saying this for 15 years.
So listen, this is one of the indicators, right? So by this, you were just talking about, oh, looking at the chart, oh, I missed it, it's already run or whatever. Let's pull back the International Tower Hill chart, and you can see when the gold bubbles really form, right? We're not even to, I'm trying to drag the wrong one. We're not even to 2020 levels yet, folks, on the gold bubbly index here, yep. Which is International Tower Hill, right? So still a long way to go, and you can see a 10x till you get back to that gold bull market of 2011, 2012. You were saying if you believe in this and if you believe in that, and you got me thinking about the movie Leap of Faith with yes. Steve Martin. I don't know if you ever saw that, where he was a traveling preacher and he and his staff looked down upon those people that came to the traveling preacher so much that they would take bets on things that he could work into the conversation, into the sermon, right? And one thing I'll always remember, I watched this movie when I was young and I don't know why it stuck with me, but aluminum siding, one of the bets was that he couldn't work that term into the sermon. And then in the movie, it like cuts to him and he's got his sequin suit on and he's like, aluminum siding. And the fucking, he gets it in there, right? And that's what it's like with Trump and the politicians. It's like, look over here at this other thing while we make this person stand up from the wheelchair. And it's like, that's what's going on, man. Come on.
Aluminum siding.
You mentioned copper. Can we look at that chart for a second?
Let's look at copper. Copper's headed much, much higher, folks. And it's going to catch awesome. A lot of people off guard. A lot of people out off guard.
Yeah, let's do this. Get your money's worth.
And if you happen to own a stock that has a lot of copper and a lot of gold, and it's in a jurisdiction that produces a lot of copper and a lot of gold, or they can make a discovery for that, you're going to do phenomenally well in this market, folks.
It's super impressive that it's recovered here like it has. So yep. Let me set the stage. Copper was ripping this spring and summer. It went to $6 the first week of June. I remember because I was at Rick Rule's conference in Boca Raton when Trump announced he was going to put 50% tariffs on copper, and yep. It went surging like this. And some people at the conference, including myself, were scratching their heads saying, where are you going to get the copper from then? And sure enough, he reversed course on the tariffs and crashed copper all the way down to here, $4.30. This is a one-year chart, but these lines, these green lines here, I've had on here for a long time, and I want you to watch what happens when I do this. Because when you go back to 2020, when this super cycle kicked off, which I've been saying for 4 years, copper is in a perfect bullish upward rising channel that wasn't even broken by the canceling of tariffs in July. And what you've had now is a recovery that keeps that trend intact and copper looking like it wants to go to $5, because tariffs or not, these data centers are getting built out. This grid is getting built out. I was reading an article in the New York Times this week that said even industrial parking lots, storage lots are at a premium because so many data centers and grid build outs are happening that construction companies can't find places to park their equipment. How much copper do you think is going to be needed to build all that shit? Again, with the critical metals focus on the U.S., copper being added to the strategic minerals list by the Department of Interior, if not earlier this month and last month that happened.
Yep.
And expedited permitting that's going to happen, whether you're talking about Resolution in the American Southwest or some other companies that you and I are aware of that are new and upcoming producers in the American Southwest, right? So a lot to like for copper and a little chest pound. Did the rotation from Freeport to Ivanhoe wonderfully when that happened. Told you that I was selling Freeport because my thesis was the U.S. tariffs. That went away. Bought the Ivanhoe up 15%, 20% on Ivanhoe in just a couple of weeks. So this is what we do day in, day out. And I forgot to mention something. You were talking about Jeffrey Gundlach having 25, saying 25% of his portfolio is, you know, that's not egregious or that's not crazy to have that much of your portfolio in gold. Well, of course it's not. I mean, think back to Henry Brown, or is it Harry Brown? Doesn't matter. And the permanent portfolio, right? That was quarter gold, quarter cash, right? Porter Stansberry updated that recently. Still quarter gold,
yeah.
Bitcoin cash, right? Bond equities or insurance companies that know how to manage bonds. That's part of a permanent portfolio. When someone asks me, my house cleaner, Jackie, by the way, like, you don't think I start with that sort of portfolio and build on that for them? Now, that's not for everybody, right? I was listening to an interview by Jeff Phillips recently, and he spends a lot of time on, like, most people shouldn't be in the junior side of the market, right? Like, you've got to have a certain investor profile for that. I'm sure he told you that when you got started.
He still tells me I'm crazy for taking the risk that I take and allocating how I allocate. I am wired for that, folks, not for everybody.
Right, it's not for everybody, right? Yeah. And I was reading some stuff from Trader Ferg this week talking about how he doesn't touch the juniors. He expresses it via GDXJ. And so there's a lick of the lollipop for everybody, right? Because in foundational profits, I don't buy juniors either. I buy GDXJ, URNJ, GLD. Yeah. And for the entire year, I'm getting to my point here, we've been nearly 40% weighted to gold, GLD, GDXJ.
Yep.
We added a royalty company, and then we added a silver producer ETF, right? So we've got nearly 40% of the portfolio in gold and precious metals related equities. And that portfolio is up nearly 50% for the year. So multiple ways to skin a cat. And Jeffrey Gundlach saying 25% isn't crazy. Of course not. We crushed the market this year with that sort of allocation, right?
Yeah, meanwhile, Gerardo Del Real over here is exclusively in the juniors, has zero producers, zero ETFs, zero funds. They're all mostly explorers. I have a couple of developers, but more than one way to skin a cat, and the portfolio is looking pretty damn all right, everybody. We can't talk gold, silver, and copper, and data centers, and AI. And by the way, let me say something else, too. Everything is awesome right now in the markets, right? It's probably going to be that way because the Fed just winked and nodded and showed you a lot of leg, right? And kind of invited you over. So it's a juiced market for asset owners. We've been trying to explain that to you all year and really reemphasizing that the last several months that it was coming and that you need to be positioned. This is as clear a sign as you can possibly have on the policy side. But Jeffrey Gundlach was on CNBC, and I caught a clip because I don't watch CNBC very often. And he was saying that he's got a very large allocation in Chinese stocks because of their good valuations, the cash on hand, and the fact that he is a hyper perma bull right now on China growing its economy. And if he's halfway correct, About the growth and the way that that's going to go, and you couple that with demand in the US for data centers and the AI boom and everything else, you can see copper at 10, 11, 12, $13 in the next several years because of the supply shortages that are not going to be able to be met without much, much higher copper prices. So I mean, things are lining up. I don't want to be like you said, Nick, I don't want to be a cheerleader and just say everything's going to go straight up. You still have to be intelligent about your picks. You still have to expect pullbacks. Everything's still not going to work out, but we have a much more favorable environment to make money. And this is the type of bull market that can make, 20,000 into 2 million or 100,000 into 5 or 10 million. We were doing that again in bear markets, having to be hyper selective and doing due diligence in very, very, very diligent ways. And we're going to continue to do that, but it's a much different environment than the environment that we had 5 or 6 years ago, or even 3 or 4 years ago, right?
Yeah, checkbooks are opening up. Companies are raising money. I alluded to that when I was talking about Beaver Creek. And just two more things I wanted to add there. One, we're big structure guys, share structure guys. Market caps matter. Like I was trying to make a list of stocks this week, and so I was looking at a bunch of different market caps.
Yep.
And like, you're at the point now where some of them are getting wonky because some of these stocks have run so much, like the turkeys are starting to fly or whatever it
Yep.
is. Like, I'll look at the market cap of one company, like call it Company A, with a couple of development assets and doing good work, and it has like $150 million market cap. And then look at Company B, which is like much more ahead, has a feasibility study in a good jurisdiction and will likely get taken out. And its market cap is only like $10 or $15 million more, right?
Yeah.
And so you got to really look and
Yeah.
see like who has it run and who's getting fairly valued and what the market caps are, et cetera. So that was one thing. And the other thing is back to politics and sentiment for just a second, because now that Biden's out and Trump is back in, I can see the flipping of the sentiment, right? And it goes by, tribalistic groups. So you remember when Biden was in office, there was a vibe session. Did you hear that term? People were saying the economy wasn't bad, even though the people were saying the economy was bad, even though it wasn't. There was job growth, the stock markets were hitting all-time highs. Now we know some of those jobs numbers, not because of Biden, but we're just overinflated, right? Like there wasn't as many jobs created as the market was being told. And now we've got some more recent jobs reports that are showing a softening of the labor market. And immediately I see folks who would have been cheering Biden for similar
Unreal.
numbers come out and say, look at Trump's economy. Look what this is doing. And my point here is this. I too, and they're mostly younger folks, and this is the point I want to make. I too was like that in my 20s and early 30s. I now have my Tulsi Gabbard and I'm in my 40s. I probably, not probably, I missed out on a lot of gains. And I'm not talking about junior miners. I'm talking about the S&P. Because I was frustrated with politicians in my 20s and 30s, because I didn't think they were doing the right things. But I wasn't smart enough and I didn't have enough world experience to know that that was entirely separate from the stock market. And it didn't really matter who was in office. It was more about the things that we talk about here: monetary policy, growth, inflation. Does the government affect that a little bit? Of course, but the numbers matter more than the color of the person's tie in office. And if you focus on that, and if you say, I don't like Trump, it's a bad economy, you're gonna miss out on the S&P, which, by the way, is at all-time record highs.
And somewhere Harry Dent is still calling for a 90% crash for the ages. That's been happening my entire 16-year career. I listened to Harry Dent for a month, I think, when I first started, and was like, it was like paralysis by analysis. I was brand new to the space. I'm looking around. I'm doing models of like the past 15, 20 years of the S&P and the Dow, and I didn't have much money, right? And so I'm looking around and I'm going, well, in a bull market, the S&P and the Dow goes up about 20% annually, right? And I'm looking at that and I'm multiplying that by the money that I have, and I'm going, that's not enough to change my life. Like, I still got to work a 9 to 5, or maybe a 9 to 5, and my wife is still working a 9 to 5, and I might need a side job, and then I need to figure out how to learn how to trade, which eventually is what I did, and that is how I stumbled into the junior resource space. And when I figured that you can make 100 times your money, 50 times your money in the space if you get it right, I was hooked, right? I've been hooked ever since. But my point is, Harry Dent's been calling for this crash since I started in the space. 16 years ago when I came across a thing the other day and he was still doing it. And I couldn't believe that was still the same shtick.
It's Kiyosaki too. I mean, that guy, I can't listen to him anymore. It's the same thing over and over and over again. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I was going to add one more thing for those of you that are newer.
And I loved Rich Dad Poor Dad. I fucking loved it. No. I still have it. I read it, but
it's required reading for all of my kids when they were younger. Absolutely. Phenomenal series, phenomenal set of books. I benefited a lot early on from those. Still great. Again, you can like, you know, this and not like that. And that's just three-dimensional human beings like all of us are. You guys might like Nick's approach better than mine or vice versa. That's just the way it goes. I wanted to say to those of you that are newer to the space, that are watching the podcast, thinking about dabbling in the space, and you listen to Nick talk about share structure and market cap, the way you figure out a market cap is very simple. You take the number of shares outstanding, which should be on any company's website, and you multiply it by the share price. And that is what the market values the company at that specific given moment. And share structure, you know what? I think one of these days we'll have a mentor of ours, the person that brought us together, Nick, and obviously somebody that to this day we talk to on a daily basis. He was just texting and calling as we speak. But I think we should have him on to do a primer on share structure. That is who we learned the business from. And no one is more of a stickler for share structure than Jeff Phillips. And I don't know how many deals I've taken to him that we've done well on. And he, you know, his retort is, this fucking thing's not going to work because the share structure is messed up. And even when it works, he'll say, imagine if they just had a better share structure, we would have done so much better. And so I think it would be beneficial for those that are newer to the space that want to learn about share structure, that want to hear it from somebody that is much more successful than us, has been doing it for twice as long as we have, and is one of the straightest shooters in the space that you'll ever meet. I think that'd be a fun episode. We'll have him on as a guest one of these days.
Happy to do it. That's a great idea. And it's a perfect segue for a shameless plug, because I think he and I will be giving a pre-conference workshop at the New Orleans Investment Conference in that same vein, kicking off the conference. It's November 2nd to 5th. And we'll be doing a pre-conference workshop on that Sunday before it starts. I just learned this today in the main ballroom, the main hall, and we're going to go through share structure, what it is, why it matters, what's good, what's bad, all that sort of stuff. And so, anyway, we'll be at the New Orleans Investment Conference. You'll be there.
Absolutely.
He'll be there. And many of the companies we talk about will be there as well. Folks that are, you know, the sponsors of Resource Doc Digest and some companies that are in our portfolio. So that's coming up here. I was looking at flights and then starting to plan things out. So that's why I bring it up, because, it's a retail conference and you folks are welcome to attend and should. And so, as I did a couple of weeks ago, we'll get a link in this description and we'll keep that going for a few more weeks, because it's the prime window to plan for Mr. Brian London's event.
Absolutely. I encourage any of you that want exposure to the space, that want an introduction to some of the better companies in the space, a phenomenal lineup. The New Orleans Investment Conference was the very first conference that I ever went to. I went to on the retail side. I paid for my tickets. I paid for my hotel. I stumbled onto meeting, you know, Mr. Jeff Phillips amongst others. And it was incredibly beneficial for me getting going, starting out, learning the space. Anyone that wants to go to the conference, that wants a discounted rate, email us. We'll see what we can do for you. And if you're at the conference, please, by all means, come say hello. We love talking to subscribers. We love talking to listeners. Sometimes it's great, sometimes it's not, but we love all the feedback and we love all the banter. And believe you me, any company that we've written a significant check for in the past year, and there's been several that are doing well, they're going to be at the conference, because we're making them go to the damn conference to pitch what they have. Because if they're willing to pitch us when we write the check, they should be absolutely willing to talk to everyone else there in a bull market if they believe in what they have. And I think that's a perfect segue into the premium portion of the podcast, but you had one more thing. I saw you, Nick. You had a thought.
I was going to say it'll be my 14th year in a row speaking there. It's one of the first conferences that I spoke at and attended. And it's a great city, right? That's what I was going to make a joke. But first, you can go out and have a good meal. Beaver Creek, you're sort of cloistered in the Beaver Creek Village there. It's more about meetings and getting stuff done. But at New Orleans, you can recreate a little bit, have some nice dinners, see some music, go see some shows, whatever it is.
See a lot of things.
I'm getting there. You can see a lot of things, including, as I've talked about multiple times on this podcast, Miss Sarah Palin's thong, which I did as a young gentleman in the green room. And we'll just leave it there.
The New Orleans Investment Conference 2025, folks. Lots of memories have been had. Lots of memories will be made. We will be recording this very podcast live from the conference. Nick will be presenting Jeff, which I don't understand if you folks understand how rare it is for Jeff Phillips to be speaking in a public venue. He'll be there presenting with Nick and I think maybe a solo presentation. So no, it's going to be a phenomenal conference. Let's segue into the premium portion of the podcast. Things are happening. Yeah, things are cooking. I am Gerardo Del Real along with Mr. Nick Hodge. It was great getting back. Thank you all for your time. This was the 334th episode of our weekly therapy session. We might have to start doing these twice a week that we call Investing in Bizarro World. Have a great week, everyone. My Cubs are back in the playoffs. First time clinched in quite some time, we clinched the spot. And so, no, it's going to be a phenomenal playoff run. I'm excited for that, Nick.
I meant to tell you a story. I'm sorry. We got to go another minute.
No, so, we're good.
I was reading an article this week about Roberto Clemente. Mm. And when he, did you see this? Stop me if you saw this.
Depends on the story. I know.
So he won the World Series in the early 1970s and they interviewed him after the game. And he was the first athlete in the U.S. to do a sports interview in Espanol. And that was like a breakthrough moment. And then, so you know this story?
No.
What happened this week?
No.
So this week, the Pirates were playing the Cubs. He was on the Pirates, obviously.
Sure.
And it was like some anniversary. And so during the game this week, one of the games earlier this week between the Cubs and the Pirates, they broadcast the entire first two innings in Espanol. And you know who was on the call?
Who?
Roberto Clemente Jr.
Oh, that's beautiful, man. I record every Cubs game. I will go back and watch that. If it was on the Pittsburgh broadcast, I will find it. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome, right?
Mm. That is awesome.
I thought you would like that.
Yeah, no, that's phenomenal. That's a great way to end the podcast. Roberto Clemente did a lot of work, a lot of good, amazing, generous community work in the U.S. and in his native Puerto Rico, right? And so the Roberto Clemente Award is an award that's given every year to the player that shines in his community and does, you know, a lot of community service and foundation service and work for the respective person's community. And this year on the Cubs, one of our Cubs, Kyle Tucker, was nominated for that award. So it's great that they do it. They do it in memory of Roberto Clemente, who, you know, passed tragically doing exactly that, you know, getting food and medicine and goods back home to his native Puerto Rico. So full circle moment. That was a great story, Nick. Appreciate it.
I knew you'd like it. Sorry, I forgot.
Love it. Episode 334, everybody. It's been great. Have a good one.
See ya.